Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is me, your host, Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss LinkedIn analytics. And who better to discuss with than the one and only Andreas Jonsson, the co-founder and CEO of Shield, that is shieldapp.ai, which is the leading analytics platform for LinkedIn. He's also a serial entrepreneur, and he graduated from the Y Combinator Startup School in the 2020 winter batch. Andreas is also a guest lecturer at the Aalborg University in Copenhagen, and that's where he teaches innovation, entrepreneurship, business models, and service design. Quite a busy guy. He gets tons of emails, pings on intercom, hundreds of notifications on LinkedIn. So the point is, I have to cut chase and get going. Andreas, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Yag. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
All right. Such a pleasure having you on the show today. Right, Andreas, let's dive right in. Let's start with something that's tricky for a lot of people like me who are users of Shield. When a LinkedIn post tanks, which happens quite a lot, we just dust it off and make another post. We don't really know why a post tanked. So what are your thoughts about how often should one go to Shield to check their analytics? While Shield definitely helps track one's engagement evolution on LinkedIn, does it help in identifying what should one improve on?
Absolutely. Great question. So I think, of course, it comes down to who you are and what you do and what you're trying to achieve with LinkedIn. And we both agree that LinkedIn is a great opportunity. But back to your question. So it depends. So we have people who check and log into Shield several times a day. And then we have people who log in weekly or every other week. So it depends highly on how active you are on LinkedIn. So if you post every day, it makes sense to log in every day. It depends on whether you manage multiple accounts on a platform. So if you are looking at a team of 10, 20 people, and it depends on how you work with the data and what you're going to use it for. So there are these factors that play in as to how often one should go into Shield or how often one does go into Shield.
So does it also go beyond just looking at one's evolution, or does it help in also identifying areas of improvement for somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the second part is the really interesting part where you can actually make new decisions, better decisions based on the data that you see. So one thing, as you rightly said, is the evolution of your journey on LinkedIn. You can easily see that on the Shield dashboard. But more importantly, for me and for a lot of people who use Shield, is to check in, to understand what's working and what isn't working in order to make informed decisions, data-driven decisions with your content moving forward. So that's the key aspect for me in the Shield app. And how you can work with Shield and LinkedIn in combination.
Right. That's a really interesting perspective. Now, I've seen you often talk about the need to choose a sustainable cadence of posting and using LinkedIn posts for evolving one's personal brand. And obviously, the more one posts, the better volume of data that Shield gets to analyze as well. But can you share a little bit on what are the top two or three use cases that people use Shield for? Are these always individual buyers for personal branding, or are there business use cases too?
Absolutely. Great question. Thanks for that. So we have a couple of different use cases, and that's not something we knew when we started out. We were exploring at that point as well. But now we have three general established use cases of Shield. So we have one, which is the individual user, people creating content for whatever reason, right? The multiple reasons for that. But the aspect that it relates to personal branding is probably the biggest and fastest accelerating reason for people to post and create. So we have individual users, that's one segment, one use case. Then we have companies with in-house initiatives. So for example, you have companies running corporate influencer programs, thought leadership programs, graduate programs, where with different strategies and different KPIs, try to be out there on LinkedIn, displaying culture or displaying awareness about the brand trying to generate new biz, lower staff turnover, bring in talent, whatever the reasons may be for a company to be active on LinkedIn through their employees. So that's the second use case, companies with their in-house initiatives. And then we have a third one where we call it agencies, which are either hired by individuals. So that would usually be executives or influencers who need backup in creating and repurposing content. So they hire an agency for that. Or the companies that I just mentioned who may need a helping hand for their leadership team, their sales team, or teams in general who need this expertise coming from the outside of the organization, then managing or helping or training the company. So individual users, companies with their own initiatives, and then the agencies supporting either individuals or the companies. So those are the three key use cases.
That's really interesting. You know, I never thought about the other two use cases apart from individuals. So that's really interesting for me as well as for a lot of people who are listening to this today. And one thing that both you and I commonly talk about on LinkedIn is about the value of building relationships and trust. And now let me put that into the context of Shield and try to measure what's working for me or what's not working, etc. Yes, you do have a bunch of consolidated parameters like number of comments, views, engagement rate, so on and so forth for a selected time period. But as a true well-wisher of Shield, I want it to be something more than people posting screenshots on LinkedIn. So if I want to use Shield's data to decide what kind of post should I make, what are the things on the current platform that will help me answer the question?
Absolutely. So it's a question we get quite often, like what kind of post should I make? How do I make a great post that will, you know, both beat the algorithm and resonate with a given audience? So my reply to that is always that it's very subjective and contextual, what will work for you. So it's good that you have data from Shield. I often look at it in the lens of content market fit. So I'm trying to figure out what resonates with my audience and then do more of that. And that's, I guess, the essence of your question, like what kind of post should you make? That depends on what resonates with your audience, right? So how do you do that on Shield? I look at the content market fit you have to do the right content in the right format on the right channel for the right audience, right? So what is the right content? That could be different topics, different talking points, your approach to the content. So is it educational? Is it entertaining? How can you use Shield to figure out where to go in all of this? So we have something called labels on Shield, where you can, for each individual content piece, you can label the content piece on the Shield platform and then very easily pull up statistics related to a given label. So let's say you want to experiment an A-B test in a way between educational content and then very entertaining content. A piece of content could, of course, be both, but let's, for the sake of the argument here, say that they're not the same thing. So you would label certain content pieces educational, and you would label certain content pieces entertainment. And then after you've done, let's say, 10 pieces on each, then you go into Shield, you pull up the analytics on those pieces by using the labels, so you can very easily do that. And then you would be able to see, okay, my educational pieces get a lot of views compared to the entertaining pieces, which get a lot of reactions, for example. And by that, you can then sit back and figure out, okay, do I want this or do I want that? And so what would I then have to do in order to get more of what you want, right? So that was the right content. Then there's the right format. So would your audience enjoy video, text, PDFs, carousels, images, audio bits, all of that? That's also very contextual and audience specific. So again, you could use labels for that on Shield. Whenever you post a video with a call to action, you could label it both video and call to action. You can do this exact same thing as I just explained to figure out what is the right format and not only the right content. So by doing that with labels, you would be able to, over time, of course, you need to shoot at the target in order to have data, but you would figure out what is the right content for you. What is the right format for you and your audience? And then the right channel. In this case, LinkedIn is a given for distribution because it's a LinkedIn-related platform we're building. But you may discover that when you talk, for example, about your podcast, those posts may perform better than when you're talking about something else, which could suggest to you that your podcast is in high demand, suggesting that you do more content around your podcast, right? So that was an example of the channel. And then at the very end, you have to do this for the right audience. So who are they? You know who you want to talk to and communicate with. I know who I want to communicate with and build an audience around. So for me, I look in Shield and what we call audience demographics, which gives you pie charts of who's viewing your content across companies, across occupations, across regions. So you can see and you can be super specific on a per post basis, seeing who your audience is. And then, of course, you can look at the actual engagement on the post, figuring out if those who engage are also those you want to target. So going through this content market fit framework, the right content, the right format, the right channel, the right audience, you can actually use the features in Shield, labels, audience demographics, and so to get an understanding, at least, of what's actually going on with your content and how can you then improve. Long answer, I know. Right. But
I wanted this because it's very, very useful, and it's important to go deeper so that everybody who is listening also gets a perspective of how they can make the best out of Shield. And that brings me to another interesting question. Like, at any point, is Shield going to get prescriptive?
Yeah, that's definitely something we want to do. So right now, you have to do the hard work. So we have, I like to think of it this way. So there is data, right? Data in itself is the raw material. Data in itself does nothing other than rest there where it is, right? So from data, you can start to categorize, you can start to group, cluster, and stuff like that, and then you get information. You can say that a certain amount of something did this or performed like so. And when you start doing that, you move from information, or you move from data to information to knowledge once you start connecting the dots. From that, of course, you need to generate some insights. And this is where prescriptive and deeper down the analytics space would open up for machine learning and algorithms to take over that part that the user is currently in charge of, namely generating knowledge and insights from the data. But this is a direction we want to head in, both because we have a lot of data, we've processed millions of LinkedIn posts, so it's a natural and good next step for us, but also because as a user, both myself and I assume you would experience this as well, you still have to do the heavy lifting, figuring things out, right? The data is there, the information may be there, but the insights are not there. You have to connect the dots. You have to identify the patterns. And the more we can take on that workload, the less friction there is on the user side and the more actionable the platform becomes. So definitely we want to move down the analytics space and provide what you would come to expect from analytics products. So forecasting, what can you expect if you keep doing this? Suggestions, recommendations to content that would resonate with your audience, given the facts that are in the data historically. So absolutely great question, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting because given the way people operate on LinkedIn, it's going to be a little tough to prescribe the right kind of things for every individual. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that coming up.
The more data you have on a given individual, so if you post daily for a year, you have a lot of posts, right? And there will be patterns that will be identifiable in that data that could suggest something, right? And that's what we do manually right now with our own data and some do it more than others, but look into exactly what are these patterns, and okay, maybe that's where you need to double down instead of over here, for example. And this is the kind of information that I think would be not easy, but definitely doable to build so that everyone on Shield can actually get some recommendations, some actionable insights from the data. I think that's definitely possible.
Right, that'll be really interesting. So as the next jump off point, you know, I want to ask you about the frequency heat map on Shield right next to the five top performing posts. Mm-hmm. Now, when someone does a mouse over on the frequency heat map, we see a label that says something like value equal to 2 or value equal to 4, which is obviously indicating how valuable a particular post is. But that said, what do people make out of it? Like, how does one understand what exactly in that post was perceived to be valuable? The point is, you know, how can we replicate something that worked for us?
Yeah, so in fact, that feature and that heat map you're referring to, that the number that it's showing on the value is the amount of posts on that specific day. So it's not how well it performed, in fact.
Right.
So you would have the graph, the illustration below that, that is showing how views and traction and engagement on the post has been accumulated. So there you would be able to see on the blue bars just below, if you identify a tall one and you can click it, then you get to that post or those posts on that specific day that performed well. So that's a way to look into it. But I think the question, what you're saying here is like, what is value at the end of the day, right?
Yes.
And how do you figure out, okay, let's say you've identified that when you do a certain content format, let's say video, and when you talk about your podcast in a video, that seems to perform well. But is it the podcast, or is it because it's video? Like, what, or is it because of what you write, or is it because of what you say? Like, what is the perceived value amongst your audience? And that is not something Shield has in the platform today, and it's super difficult to figure out because, again, it's contextual, subjective, and unique to each of us. And one thing is, you know, what people perceive as valuable on the receiving end. Another thing is what we think we provide of value. And there may be a misalignment there. We may think that something we do on our content is the value-adding thing, while the recipients of, or the audience of consumers of that content piece may think it's something else. And I think this is me coming from a product service design background with talking about value metrics and so forth. Where it's always interesting to try and understand the dynamics between the proposed value and the perceived value. But that's going down a rabbit hole that I'm not sure we have time for on this show.
No, what I was trying to understand was, how do I start replicating something that's really working for me? So identifying that and doing that more often.
Yeah, I think what you would be looking for is first and foremost to identify what kind of social metrics you care about. So if you care about comments, which is often a go-to a key metric, because you build community, you build engagement, you get to interact in a light way with new people. So comments are always good to go for. So let's say that's your northern star. You wanna build a community around your content. So you pull up your best performing content pieces on Shield based off of the comment metric. And then when you have, let's say, 10, 15, 20 posts ranked from highest amount of comments and then in a descending order, then you would go about and manually synthesize the insights based off of what you see. So you would have to do some lifting here. You would have to look into exactly what kind of posts are in the top 10. And maybe you can immediately identify patterns saying, okay, it's only text posts when you talk about X instead of Y instead of C. And that would give you a suggestion that maybe try to bring this topic that is in your top 10, maybe try to bring that to LinkedIn in a different content type to see if it is in fact the topic or if it has something to do with the format more than the content itself. So you see, there's a lot of work still to be done when you have the data and the information at hand. And you could say with Shield as it is today, we bring the data and we visualize it in certain ways so you get information. But from there and onwards, from information to knowledge to insight to, let's say, wisdom, you need to do the work at this point.
Right. Okay, so let's move into the next part where let's talk about what people can expect from Shield going forward. And my challenge here is to keep you away from saying something like, stay tuned to Shield, we have exciting things coming up. So I'm going to ask you things in a much more pointed way.
Yeah.
Will Shield continue to be an analytics product for LinkedIn? Or can we expect Shield to evolve into a platform which will be a suite of products related to LinkedIn marketing?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so great, great question. So the two parts of that question. The first part, if we're going to be an analytics or continue to be an analytics product for LinkedIn, and the answer to that is yes, definitely. That's where we started, and that's where we see organic demand increasing, right, from across these use cases that I talked about earlier. So stats and analytics for LinkedIn, absolutely. This was our way into the space. It was proven to be valuable to a lot of people. So definitely we're leaning in on that and are going to do more of it, as we briefly touched upon minutes ago. The second part of the question, if we can expect, Shield to evolve into a platform with a suite of products related to LinkedIn marketing. So yes, and I would say, so the yes part of the answer is we're looking into building complementary products, right? So LinkedIn Analytics is a very specific place in the content creator's journey. It's when you have posted, you get some data, some information. But there are multiple steps before posting that are interesting to look into. So namely creating, collaborating on content. And then there is... Then there's the whole loop of, okay, creating, as I just said, and then the analytics part, and then, okay, what are you going to do next, and how will that influence your actions going back into the creation process? So we're looking to try and build more complementary products, and we do have some in R&D right now that are super interesting, and we'll hopefully hit a beta soon. So that's that part. I said yes and. When you emphasize LinkedIn marketing, and that's because there are a lot of people on LinkedIn in the human resource space. So attracting and retaining talent in organizations are incredibly important and super pricey if you get it wrong, wrong hire, for example. So in that space, there is an opportunity to create some niche products as well that also will revolve around content and personal branding and be closely related to our thoughts in terms of products for LinkedIn marketing. So yeah, we're looking into a lot of stuff that we see are missing on LinkedIn and that we continuously validate through our conversations with people like yourself and the market at large.
Right. This is amazing. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing your vision on where you want to go from here. That's really so good to hear. So that brings us to the next part of our podcast episode, which is something that we call as an interesting game show part. It's called the rapid fire section. So the idea of this section is to ask you 5 or 6 pointed questions, try my best to put you on the spot, make you be opinionated or take a stand. So that's how it's going to be. And the interesting part in today's episode is that I also have 2 questions that have come crowdsourced from people on LinkedIn. So question number 1 comes from somebody called Parry Hedrick, who is the founder of Crackle PR. And he asks, whom do you consider as the nearest competitor for Shield?
That's a good question. So right now, what we do, we're the only one who does that, right? And that's of course always a red flag when a startup says they have no competitors. But we do have competitors, and what we're competing with is either inaction or Excel sheets, spreadsheets in general. So people who don't know of us, but who are very interested in analytics and stats and LinkedIn data. They're doing it themselves right now manually, a lot of them. And that's what we initially discovered. So that's definitely a competing do-it-yourself product, you could say. Of course, when these people discover Shield, it's a good transition into a more systematic, automated way of working with data. Then another competitor could be LinkedIn if they decide to build something, which would be great. I mean, it would serve more people in the market, which is ultimately what we're trying to do. So LinkedIn bringing something to the platform would be a competing option. Of course, we could then build on top of that. And with our agility and speed compared to LinkedIn, who has muscle, would enable us to still bring competing products to the market in the analytics space on top of LinkedIn's offerings. So that could be a competitor as well. And then I hate to say it, but laziness, right? The understanding of this whole thing being nice to have more than need to have. And this is mostly coming from people who haven't really caught on to posting, who haven't built the habit yet. So they may say, like, why do I need this? It doesn't matter. I get no insights. There's no value, stuff like that. But that is something we never hear from people who post regularly, because they see the value.
Absolutely.
So those would be some competitors.
Right. That's interesting. All right. So here's question number two. What would you choose at this stage of Shield's journey? Is it quickly scaling the company or acquiring more customers with existing resources?
So the last one for sure. So we're a bootstrapped company, meaning we have no investors. And this is an active decision we made early on that we are going to build something that people want to pay for, because that ensures that we're building the right thing. To begin with, so raising money too early to try and scale something prematurely would be a mistake, in my opinion, and a lot of startups fall into that trap. So we've avoided that trap, and it's not that we haven't had the chance to raise; actually, quite the contrary. But we've chosen to hold off of that at least until we are 100% certain that scaling is absolutely the right timing to do that. So definitely a more sustainable way of growing the company, which is not often seen in the startup ecosystem, and especially not in tech. But that's the route we're taking, so we can manage things in a way where people, they don't burn out, where we won't disappoint customers and users, because we are still able to keep up with everything that's going on as we grow.
Yeah, as a bootstrap head myself, you know, it makes me so happy to hear this kind of decisiveness. So kudos to you on that. All right, here's question number three. What's your most profitable customer acquisition channel right now?
LinkedIn, no doubt. So for us, it's, I would say, almost all of our customer acquisition happens through word of mouth and organic content on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is the key channel for us. Of course, when I go on a podcast like this that is then listened to on all sorts of platforms, that's also a way to drive some traffic and interest. I acknowledge that. But LinkedIn is definitely our channel for sure, which also makes a lot of sense that we sort of are our own use case or case study. Showing that it can in fact be done to both build personal brands and sustainable companies off of organic content and not spending money on advertising.
Yeah, absolutely. It does make a lot of sense. You are the proof in the pudding. All right. So here's question number four. I think this is going to be fairly easy for you. Text posts or video posts or image posts? What's your go-to option?
For sure, text. It's what I do. I like to write. I like to put words together. So I can convey meaning in a few succinct words. So that's what I like. I know that the video specifically convey trust in a way better way than text. So it's something that I'm looking into now with the team behind me as well, producing more types of content, more formats, and experimenting across the board with that. But definitely for me, text is the go-to.
Right. I think it's for me too. I've tried all formats, and for me, I think text gives me the best output so far.
But there's also some things, and it's not that I want to talk about the algorithm, but somehow it seems that text are in ways favored by the algorithm. And I don't know why. I would be speculating if I started going down that route, but what we're seeing is usually text posts perform well. So yeah, maybe there's something to that.
Right. All right, so here's question number five. If you were tasked to convince someone to at least make one post every day, what would your most compelling pitch be?
That people are missing out if they're not doing that. And then, of course, they would say why. And then I would argue the case of myself, since I'm the one talking to that person in this hypothetical scenario. So I would say that I started posting on LinkedIn, and I posted on LinkedIn not every day, but 3 to 4 times a week for the past 12 months, generating 1.5 million views and thousands of engagements. And by doing so, I've actually managed to grow my personal brand, getting tons of you know, social proof based on that. But more importantly, I've managed to attract incredible talent to the Shield company. I've managed to grow the company as well in a sustainable way, and so forth. So I would say, even if you don't have a business, if you work in a company, posting on LinkedIn will generate opportunities for you where you're at right now, and opportunities you wouldn't see otherwise because you're not out there, because people don't discover how brilliant you are in your position, in your career, in your life, right? So people are missing out. That's the key thing to me. And that's also why I keep going on in my content about the importance of posting, the importance of getting into the feed, the importance of engaging with people, having your thoughts challenged and so forth. Because besides the value that is right there and then when you interact with people, you build long-term relationships. And those relationships, they come back around if at the most unexpected times, not because you have asked for it or because you want it to happen or because that was the intention, but just because it does. Right. When you meet people and you're genuine and you get to know each other and you know what I know what I can come to you for and you know what you can come to me for. And that's just value adding at scale on LinkedIn. And that's incredibly crazy to me that more people are not leaning into this. I mean, they are. But for the person who asked this question in this case, I would say, like, man, you're missing out.
Absolutely. And best things in life kind of compound over a period of time. So people cannot expect immediate results. And also to add to what you just said, you know, in my life, there's been no instance that I've got a job or I've worked with someone based on a CV. It is purely because of, you know, I've been there on LinkedIn for a long time and that's helped a lot.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Jaak, if someone were to hire you, they wouldn't ask for your CV. They would just look at your LinkedIn profile, see your contents, listen to your podcast, all the content you're putting out, and they would be able to, without talking to you, people would be able to sort of get to know you, see how you think, look at your TEDx talk, stuff like that, and be like, okay, this is the guy we want on our team, right? And this is what content does. And LinkedIn is a great place for that, hence this conversation and my company and so forth. But that's all you need. I've never really looked at the CVs of the people I hire. That's not true. I look at them, but mostly out of courtesy because they send it. I care more about the person and what I see in that day-to-day activity online, because that's what I'm looking for, right? So absolutely on point.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, so here's the final rapid-fire question. And this, again, comes from somebody called Brian Zait, who is the director of sales at Kapus Company. And here it goes. Do you think LinkedIn has a threat in the market right now because of the entry of players like Clubhouse? And do you at Shield plan to roll out a tool for Clubhouse?
Interesting. So there's always a threat. Anyone would be complacent thinking that there's no threat. So LinkedIn definitely has threats. I don't think Clubhouse is a threat to LinkedIn. Yeah. And what was the second part of the question? Sorry.
Yeah, the second part was, will you guys at Shield at any point roll out a tool on top of Clubhouse?
We're looking into it.
Okay, that's interesting.
No, I mean, of course, I can expand upon that for like 10 seconds.
Sure,
of course, Clubhouse is interesting, right? It's picking up traction. And sooner or later, people would want to know a lot of stuff in terms of how they behave on Clubhouse. How many rooms have you hosted? How many people participated? Who participated? What is your estimated reach? And blah, blah, blah. All sorts of things, right? So it would be interesting to see if there was a way to build a lightweight analytics, stats and analytics product for Clubhouse, and then see what else could be possible. So it's definitely something that's on our radar, but it's not something we do with our prime time here in Shield when we work.
Right, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And thank you for diving into that. Right, so that brings us to the end of this episode. And before I let you go, Andreas, would you like to share a parting message with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone listening is either posting to LinkedIn or consider posting to LinkedIn or have a company where LinkedIn is on the agenda, then hit me up on LinkedIn by my name, Andreas Johnson, or go to shieldapp.ai to check out what we do. That's the company website.
Right. That's amazing. So I was going to ask you how people can connect with you, and you've already answered that. So,
okay.
Right. So that's that for this episode to the listeners here. And until we connect with you the next time with yet another episode and with yet another amazing guest, it's bye from me, Yag, and take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.